As some of you know, I spent this week in Haiti, in one of the most horrendous, impoverished, and hopeless places on the face of God's earth. Haiti was the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere before the earthquake. And I went down there because a friend of mine, Mitch Albom, who's been at this synagogue a couple of times talking about his books, including Tuesdays with Maury and Five People You Meet in Heaven. He's rebuilding an orphanage there in a forsaken corner of Port-au-Prince. When you travel in that city, what you pass by are tent cities in which people live by whatever others bring to them. And they live in tents spring, summer, winter, and fall. But of course, winter means 85 degrees, and summer means 120 degrees, and there's nowhere to go. And between the cities are fetid, filthy streams of water where wild pigs root, and dogs go, and children bathe, and disease spreads. And there, behind a gate and a security guard, are the children of Have Faith Haiti Orphanage. And when you walk in, as I did on Monday morning, the first thing that happens is these children who have never seen you before in your life come up to you and hug you. Some of them speak English and some of them only speak Creole. Some of them have parents, but they're not parents. Like the boy I met, who was beaten every day by his father until his father threw him out on the street. And he was taken in by the orphanage, and now at 14 years old, he goes to one of the best schools in Haiti and speaks a beautiful English and has a sweet soul. His name is Dona, and he was saved. When I first spoke to Mitch about it, he said, "You know, I'm rebuilding this orphanage in Haiti." I said, "Boy, I'd love to see it someday." He said, "Well, it's a Christian orphanage." And I said, "Even so," he said, "No, I mean a Christian orphanage. They pray every night. It was founded by a pastor in Detroit 30 years ago. He came on my show and he said, it's a desperate, hopeless place and no one's helping. So I decided maybe I could help, and I went down there with two of my friends. I'm not going to tell you what religion these friends belong to, but their names are Mark Rosenthal and Mark Mendelssohn. And you should know that I first became friends with Mitch when we met in sixth grade at Akiba Hebrew Academy in Philadelphia. He said, "So it's a Christian orphanage," and I said, "I can't think of a better place for a rabbi to go." So the first night when we had prayers there, they asked me if I would say something. And by the way, one of the first things I said, because the pastor had talked about how there was no one other than God, was, "I'm going to teach you a song." I said, "It's only two words, and it talks about how there's no one other than God. The first word is Ain, and the second word is Ode. And the Ain Ode that you just sang, it's now a Haitian tradition." And I talked about how moved I was the way they took care of each other, because as you see, the 30, 40, 50, 60 children who are gathered around the prayer groups, the younger ones have their heads on the laps of the older ones. And the counselors at the orphanage are kids who grew up in the orphanage and they made it. And afterwards, a girl named Julia came up to me and said, "What is that you're wearing on your head?" Because for the tefillot, I put on a kippah. So I explained to her that this is something that Jews wear. No one there really understood what a Jew was. And I said a little bit about it and a little bit about what a kippah was. And she said, "I want one." And I said, you know, the only one I brought with me is black. I said, when I get back to Los Angeles, I'll send you some pretty ones, some colorful ones. And a friend of hers standing next to her said, yes, you should wear one in blue. And she said, no, I don't want you to choose. I want him to choose. I said, and then when I send them to you, you can wear them. And she looked at me and smiled this 1,000-watt smile and said, and I'll be a Jew. So I want you to know I made one Jew in Haiti. I was standing there on the porch watching the volunteer workers. And by the way, you want to see goodness? I mean real goodness. Not, oh, I wrote a check so I feel good goodness, but real goodness. You look at these guys who are builders in Detroit, a couple of them, by the way, Christian pastors on the side, who not only volunteer their time to help rebuild this orphanage, but remember that back in Detroit, they're not there to do their jobs. So they're losing on both ends. And day after day, in the sweltering heat, they build these structures for these children. And one of them, in the middle of talking to me, all of a sudden began to weep, not just tears, but weep. His face was wet, saying, how could I not come down here? Because these children need a place to go. And I know, he said, that God wants me to help them. And I have to tell you, although it is not in the pictures, and those of you who have the Pew Bulletin will see some of the pictures from Haiti, but if you look on our website, you'll see more of them. I spent a couple hours with Mitch grouting one of the floors. When I got up, I was drenched in sweat. My back hurt, my knees hurt. I realized I was well suited to the rabbinate. And I thought, these guys are working all day long, day after day. And they've been down there 4 or 5 times between the earthquake and now. On the plane back, I sat next to a retired software entrepreneur from Boston. And believe me, on the flight from Haiti to Miami, half the people there are volunteers. And he said to me, you know, I mobilize people from all over the world, and we've been to the tsunami, and we've been in Katrina, he said, and Haiti is the worst I have ever seen. And I realized as I met these people and saw what they were doing, that what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter taught is exactly the lesson. He said, religious people, too often, they worry about their own bodies and other people's souls. But he said, you know, if you're religious, if you're worried about your own soul and other people's bodies. And that's what they were doing. They were taking care of these children's bodies, their needs. The night that I was there with Mitch, two things happened that I will never forget as long as I live. One is I was standing on the porch and I'm looking out over the children of the orphanage. And all of a sudden I feel an arm around my shoulder. And I look, and there's this boy standing next to me, almost as tall as I am. He's 15 years old. And I said, hi there, I'm David, what's your name? He says, Junior. He said, that's not my real name, but that's what everyone calls me, Junior. And we start to talk, and then I ask him the question that you have to ask any child in any country like Haiti, where people believe they have no future. You have to ask them, what do they want to be? What do they want to do? What do they think could happen? So I said, Junior, what do you want to do with your life? He said, I want to be a doctor. I said, why do you want to be a doctor? And he said, because I want to be a blessing to my country. Before I tell you the second story, I have to pause to let you know about doctors. That I'm sitting there, and a couple of the kids are calling to one of the other kids. And you know what they're calling? Hey, Lewinsky. I said, what's his name? They said, Lewinsky. I said, is that his first name or his last name? They said, no, his first name. His name is Lewinsky. So I called him over. A handsome, strong, strapping young guy who was helping the builders. I said, excuse me, your name's Lewinsky? He said, yes, Lewinsky LaFleur. That's my name. I said, can you tell me how you got the name Lewinsky? He said, when I was 2 years old, I needed an operation to save my life, and there was a doctor who was treating people in Haiti whose name was Lewinsky. He saved my life, and shortly afterwards was killed by government troops. And my mother gave me his name. She too has since died, he said, but she told me I should always remember the man who saved my life, so my name is Lewinsky. That night, Mitch was giving his nightly inspirational talk the night before I left, and he told them two things in addition to all the other things. The day was what the day was going to be like tomorrow, what they had to do. And then he said, there are going to be two things tomorrow that are really important. The first is, tomorrow you're going to get new beds. They were sleeping on rotting old pieces of foam and rusted springs on the porch outside. But he said, in order to get your new bed, you have to sleep inside. You see, none of the children would sleep inside because they were afraid that the roof would fall in on them, because they were all there for the earthquake, and they all saw dead people in the streets and people covered in blood and buildings falling down, and they don't want to go in buildings anymore. And he said, I promise you that our builders have made these buildings safe and we're getting you new beds, but you can only have the beds if you sleep inside. Will you sleep inside? And they all said yes. And then he said, and something else is going to happen tomorrow that hasn't happened before. You're going to get something new. It's called lunch. From now on, he said, you're going to eat three meals a day, because people should eat three meals a day, and that's what you need. And that's what you'll get. And I said to him, look, I can't build a building. I can barely grout a floor. But I know people. I know people who can buy beds. I know people who can buy medicine. I know people who can give them money to have indoor bathrooms, which none of them have. That I can do. I know people who understand that there is nothing more sacred than seeing Jews, Christians, white, blacks together to do this mitzvah. I know people, I said to some of the kids, who understand what our Talmud teaches us. Nivra Adam Yechidi, that God made one person at the beginning of creation. Why? Lelamedcha, to teach you. Shekol ha-mikayem nefesh echad ki'ilu kiyem ma'olam malei, that someone who saves one person, it's as if they save an entire world, because we all came from one. And who know that if you save Julia, or Lewinsky, or Dona, or Nachum, or Israel, or any of those children, that you're saving a world. That will go to the website, or will give money to the synagogue, to a Haiti fund, for that orphanage where I know, that all the money is going to the children and to the buildings, because everybody down there is a volunteer. Those people I know. And I said, I know people who, when souls cry out to them in yearning, do not turn away. I know people who live in the richest country in the history of the world, who have air-conditioned homes and food on the table and food in the trash can. And I know that their hearts are not hard. And I know that they believe the message of Martin Luther King And now I'm going to teach you something about Dr. King that I learned last night that I never knew. Theodore Bickel was here last night. And in the line at the end, he came up to me and he pulled me aside and he said, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something that Dr. King once said to me. He said, we were talking. And he said to me, you know the question at the beginning of Genesis, am I my brother's keeper? He said, the answer is no. The right answer is, I'm not my brother's keeper. I'm my brother's brother. My brother's brother. We make distinctions and differences. They're that and we're this. But the truth is, all you have to do to break down the barrier is meet someone and listen to their story and look in their eyes and see their souls. Kol ha-mekayem nefesh echad ki'ilu kiyem olam male. Save one person. You can't save all of Haiti. It's broken. It will take years. It will take decades. Who knows? But you can save one child. One person there or elsewhere in the world. Here in Los Angeles, abroad, there are souls that are crying out to you. One soul is saving a world. And we, who are so blessed and are so lucky as to be here today, we hear those yearning souls. And we will not turn away. Shabbat Shalom.